everyone, and welcome back to Ginger Gerald, You Lucky Bastard. Do you know that quite a few people I know, they've started calling me Ginger Gerald without even thinking about it. At work, on the paddle court, even some of my own family members will come up to me and say, Ginger Gerald, almost subconsciously. Sometimes they just say, Oi Ginger. That takes me back a few years, especially as these days I'm a bit of a mix between ginger, grey, white, you know. Anyway, after last week's emotional but fabulous return visit to Mexico, where we explored what it feels like to go back to a place you used to live in many years earlier, that was rediscovered Mexico, today we're going to follow up that by talking about international families. What is one? How do you define that term? Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Or more to the point, what are the advantages and disadvantages of being part of one? What feels good and what feels bad? And where really is home? Now, firstly, you need to bear in mind that the concept of an international family is pretty alien to so many people, probably not to you lot, otherwise I guess you wouldn't be listening in. And it's a term that can be interpreted in a million and one different ways. Now, for many people, if you were to say to them, oh yes, we're an international family, you know, then at worst, you're going to come across as a bit of a twat, which may or may not be a reasonable conclusion to draw. And at best, you'll come across as being maybe a little aloof, living a rather privileged lifestyle, maybe a tad glamorous, and definitely considerably richer than the average family. And yep, I get it. Some, quite a few in fact, international families may very well fit that description very nicely. But certainly not all of them, and not all of them all of the time. Perhaps the most obvious and common example of an international family is one where one parent's from one country and the other is from another. But they can only live in one place at a time, so by definition, at least one of them is living outside of their own assigned home country, if such a thing as an assigned home country actually exists. And the two of them will definitely have had different upbringings, in different cultures, and with different influences, and quite possibly with different native languages too. Now that's all quite challenging enough for the two adults involved, but at least they've chosen to be involved. But if those adults then have children, then the impact it has on those children is huge. They're born into an international family and are international children, whether they like it or not. And that doesn't, by any stretch of the imagination, mean that they're automatically privileged or rich or snooty or that they live a glamorous lifestyle. Although, yes, they may travel rather more than the average person, and they may even flip backwards and forwards between languages depending where they are or who they're speaking to. But that's just being international, isn't it? A second example of an international family is where a couple or a family where they all share the same nationality either choose to move to another country for whatever reason, often for work but not always, or are obliged to move to another place, maybe for their own safety or protection. Does that make them privileged? Well, in the case of people fleeing from war zones or famine or persecution of whatever sort, then of course it's completely the opposite. But that's a deep and much heavier topic, maybe for another time or another podcast. In the case of Ginger Gerald and family, well, our move overseas was most certainly a choice. Now, admittedly, it was driven by redundancy and the need to get another job. But the decision was also influenced by the fact that both of us had spent many years living overseas at different times and in different places previously. So moving abroad wasn't quite such a novelty to us, although doing it with a family was definitely a new and slightly scary step. So if being an international family isn't all glamour and privilege, as some are led to assume, then what is it that makes it difficult or challenging? For me, the obvious to that question is distance. As an international person or international family, you're always a long way from someone else in your family. And that might be a parent, a grandparent, a child, a grandchild, a sibling, not to mention, of course, a close friend. You can't just arrange to pop down the pub with them or go round for lunch. Cousins can't play together or go to the same youth club. And family members can't babysit for you or take the kids to school or to the playground or all of those million and one things which normal, i.e. non-international families, might be able to do all of the time. All those daily and constant interactions which create and strengthen bonds between one family member and another, often of different generations, they're just not there if you're a flight or two flights away from each other. And very often, you're on different time zones too. Now, of course, communication these days is so much easier than it used to be. You've got WhatsApp, you've got FaceTime, you've got Zoom, you've got Teams and all the rest. You no longer have to stick a stamp on a letter or postcard and hope it arrives or make a long distance phone call. At least you can see each other's faces and feel, you know, a little bit more like you belong. But for all the hype that surrounds these fantastic new communication tools, it's just not a patch on being there in person, is it? Virtual hugs just don't cut the mustard. What if the person from whom you're distant is elderly, unwell, maybe unable to make or take calls using these new technologies? Then it's practically impossible for you to be a routine part of their life or to care for them or even to share the caring for them, unless you're in a position where you can drop everything and head off to spend extended periods of time with them, which not everybody can. And if you do jump on a plane to be there to help a relative in need and to be a part of their life, then you have, at least temporarily, walked out of somebody else's life. It's a tricky, vicious circle and doesn't really have a perfect solution. And this type of scenario leads inevitably to a feeling of guilt. Guilt for taking children away from their grandparents. Guilt for not being present to help an elderly parent or grandparent. Guilt for relying on other relatives or friends to help because you're not there. Bit of a grim theme I've touched on here, isn't it? But a very, very real one. And very much the dark and less obvious side of being an international family. So, changing the theme and lightening things up a little bit, we very often get asked, so where are you from then? Or the more difficult question, where do you call home? How do you respond to those questions when you're international? Well, for me personally, the first question's very easy. Where am I from? I'm from Stoke-on-Trent. I've no doubt about that. It's where I was born, it's where I was brought up, it's where I lived until I was 18. And if any further evidence was needed, I've always been and will always be a Stoke City supporter. And very, very few people who are not from Stoke support Stoke. And my wife, T, she'd also find that question relatively straightforward, perhaps a little less so than for me, because she moved from Wales to England at an early age, but still not tricky to explain and to be understood. But if someone asks my son, for example, where he's from, what does he say? Well, I was born in England, but I can't remember living there. I went to primary school in Mexico, I went to secondary school in Spain, and now I'm at university in Wales. So what's the correct answer? Well, the easy answer might be your birthplace. Brighton. I'm from Brighton. But then the follow-up questions roll in. Oh, nice place, Brighton. I know it well. Did you used to go to this place or that place? Did you hang out here or there? To which the honest answer is, no, I've no clue what you're talking about. And then you sound a bit dumb or just plain weird. So the other option he has is to go into a detailed chronological explanation of his life up to this point, which tends to get either a blank face or a response of, "You lucky bastard." Then we get back to the question of this podcast. And then the question, you could turn the question around and ask the people who are asking you, "So, where do you think I'm from?" What about that second question? Where is home? Well, if you're one of those international type people I've been describing, then chances are your typical smooth and cliched answer is like to be, "Home is where the heart is." I can't get that out of my mind this week. So where's your heart then? Well, some of it's in the UK, some of it's in Mexico, some of it's in Spain, some of it's with my kids, wherever they happen to be, here, there and everywhere. So what does that easy and handy little phrase actually mean? Now, if I've been asked, "Where's home for you?" which I'm sure I was, back in my holiday repping days in the early 1990s, then I probably would have answered, "Well, right now, I don't really feel I have a home, but I'm sure I'll have one day." Maybe my home was really the lifestyle I was living, or the repping community that I felt I belonged to for about 7 years or so. So those of you who've been holiday rep, would you agree with that? Until you get more into the echelons of management or a more senior position, you never knew when you were going to get moved from one place to another. So you can't really call anywhere home. I did multiple seasons in the French and Swiss Alps, a season in Corsica, a season in Tunisia, but I wouldn't and didn't ever call any of them home. In fact, the first time I went to live in Cancun, it wasn't home either. But a few years later, the second time around, it did become home. So maybe home shouldn't be defined as a place or a postcard or a building. But if someone asked me if I'd ever been homeless, then very fortunately for me, I'd definitely say no. So for years I had no home, but I wasn't homeless. Well, I definitely had somewhere to sleep, somewhere to call my own, albeit temporarily, somewhere to be warm, somewhere safe, and somewhere to eat. When people go off to college or university, does that become their home? Or do students refer to home as the home they were brought up in? And then what happens if their parents move house? Then where does the student call home? It's all very complicated. And of course, even more so for us internationals. Here's another scenario to consider, a little bit niche. Budding pro tennis players, usually in their 20s, but maybe 20s and 30s as well, they have to travel non-stop all across the globe just to compete to get points to win the right to enter the elite pro tour. Some spend years and years doing this, which incidentally costs an absolute fortune and is often just not possible without either very well-off parents or benefactors or some other passive income source. And very many, the vast majority, don't make it all the way. Where feels like home for them? Very many of them would be classed as international. Many of them will have attended academies in various parts of the world. But is that home? Where would they have said is home for them? And here's a good one to consider, and this is becoming more and more important now. What about people who live in motor homes? They're even called motor home. This is a growing community, folks. A few years ago, there were 20,000 in the UK. Now there's loads more, and it's increasing by the day. You know, people living in their VW camper vans with flip tops, their big white boxes, or their super deluxe coaches with sliders on the side. If someone asks this passionate community where they call home, they will definitely say, "Wherever my van takes me." So home, for some people, is more of a destination than a specific place at a given point in time, or even a journey. In the wild, animals often find their way back to their birthplace, their original home, to die. Maybe some of us international folk are just the same as that, and home is actually where we will eventually go back to or end up. So next time you ask someone, you know, just as a conversation starter, because you're a bit bored or a bit embarrassed in a Christmas party, or just to pass the time of day, and you ask someone, where's home for you? Make sure you've got a bit of time to listen to understand the answer, because if you end up asking some international type, you might be there all day. And speaking of home, it's about time I got myself around to doing a few home tasks. It's getting on for Christmas, so next week on Ginger Gerald, You Lucky Bastard, we'll be talking about spending Christmas overseas. How and when do you celebrate it? What makes it different from being at home, whatever home is? What are the traditions? What makes you happy or sad? And of course, we'll be sharing a few funny stories of things that have happened around that time of year in different places over the many years we've been overseas. So, folks, thanks again for listening. Keep an eye on our social media channels, you know what they are, for updates. And please, please do me a big favour if you haven't yet done so. On most of the podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple, you can rate a show, and these ratings then get shared and help to promote the podcast without having to buy and shove in all those annoying ads for stuff. So if you like the show, then give me a 5-star rating. It'll only take you a couple of seconds, or even add some comments if you fancy it. And if you really don't enjoy these shows at all, then, and they don't enrich your life, then just swipe on past and don't bother rating it at all. Thanks, folks. And remember, next week we'll be feeling a lot like Christmas. Bye.
Thank you, Ginger Gerald, for enriching our lives.